The Army Registration Office at St. Louis High School in Washington, D.C. is one of the most active offices for drawing the youth to war. Every month, the Army and the Pentagon give sums of money to schools throughout the U.S., and in return, Army Registration Offices are set up in schools. They give forms to young adult students in order to draw and enroll more forces in the Army and send them to fight in Iraq or Afghanistan. But what is propagated in these advertisements and what the officers in charge of the recruitments describe to the high school students differs greatly from the harsh realities of the Army and war.
Wanting to meet ladies, you know, definitely talked to me about the potential of traveling overseas. I didn't really think about it in context of going to war at the time. I thought, you know, I might go to Europe or Asia, and I wound up going to both places. But it was not this picture of a military at war was not painted to me.
Because the high schools have by war to get federal funding. They must have the recruiters in the building, okay? Go listen. What I'm going to tell you is go listen. They're still doing the same type of argument now that they were doing 7 years ago, 8 years ago. The lies, deceit, the deception of the military recruiters was exactly what I told them. That's the part I resented. So they caught my son under false pretenses, and they caught many, many others under false pretexts. If they had told my son and the others the truth, okay, then a decision could have been made with foresight. He was an 17, 18-year-old child, as what they are doing right now.
Target identified.
Element search for Hotel Victor Tango's 2 and 8. Execute assault time now.
Army's promotional activities are pretty much deceptive. The energy and enthusiasm of the youth is exploited through promises of exciting activities and facilities. The Army staff responsible for recruiting new troops never conveys the whole reality of war. Volunteers are employed with false hopes.
I went down to the Marine recruiter one day and I said, I want to join. But I was too young. I was only 17, so he sent me back to my mother and said, your parents have to sign guardianship away to the military. You can go into the military if you're 16 or 17.
It's a long time ago. They didn't really tell us that much. I mean, there was this... The recruitment process in the military is very macho, I would say, and you know, there's this excitement on the fact that you're going to go kill someone. I mean, it's that simple. Like, I can remember being at the recruitment station, and the recruiter was telling these other people that came in, like, James here, he's going to be an infantry ranger. He's going to kill some people. He's going to be on this poster right here on the wall. You know, it's like this is the kind of recruitment.
Well, if you come here, you get to blow up. And of course, as a 17-year-old boy, who doesn't want to blow up? Really, like that's. That's what you grow up with, G.I. Joe and the explosions on TV and Schwarzenegger and all that action movies. And I mean, that's pretty much a dream for a little kid. So, and that's what I was still at 17. I was a kid. And so I signed up right on the spot. I didn't even realize at the time that I could go in the Marines and still blow up. I could do explosives in the Marines. I didn't have to go there. Didn't care. Signed up right on the spot. No questions asked. My mom was happier about that. She still wasn't quite happy, but she was happier in the sense that, you know, in her opinion, the National Guard didn't go to war.
What's the definition of leadership?
Man, the definition of leadership is to motivate young adults to become better citizens, man!
Families have different reasons when they send their children to the Army. Many of them consider lack of job opportunities, unemployment, and poverty as the main motives for their children to join the military. These very young individuals have to serve a period in the Army to provide their university tuition. But joining the Army and going to war crosses out all hopes for continuing their education.
I had no no money for college. I had no real job opportunities, no job skills. All of these things played a huge part into why I went into the military, and it's why a majority of the people go into the military. If we look at the advertising campaigns for the military, it's not come be a patriot. It's come learn this job. Come get money for college. The things that I did in Iraq, I was not thinking about anyone in the United States and if I was protecting them. I was sent to Iraq. I had orders, or I would have been arrested and gone to jail if I didn't go to Iraq.
The vast majority of people who join the military don't join because they want to go to war. They join because there's no jobs for young people when they get out of high school. They join because their families who can't give their kids health care, who can't pay their rent, who can't pay their mortgage, who need a place to live. They're people who need the things that we all deserve.
We had a lot of Latinos who were told that they would become citizens. And you hear about it in the news right now that people's families are being deported after the soldier has been killed. And at that moment, I was 23 years old. I had lived on my own for so long, and I was living with my parents again because I just recently wrecked my car and whatnot. And so I was back in school when the towers were hit, and it was the way to get out. It was the only way that I really knew how to get out and try and get on my own. So I enlisted.
A feature of this military call-up is the pressure there is on the National Guard troops to join the deployed forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. The National Guard troops were usually used in urban operations and have a different responsibility than that of the military and armed forces. But in recent years, they have been forced to serve some time in Iraq or Afghanistan, or else go to prison if they refuse.
Like I said, like these guard units had not been called up. And then you call a group of them, say, from where my son lives, in Wilkes-Barre. They'll call, they'll say they need 100 people out of Wilkes-Barre. And then they'll take them and put them into the Army. Okay. So they're integrated then into an Army unit. And that's what happened to him. It was when the war began in 2003, we were very afraid that he might be affected, but we honestly didn't think he would be called into battle in Iraq.
That's definitely that's how they presented the situation. They presented it as either you go to war or go to jail, in essence. And you know, I chose, at least in the short term, war, and fortunately I only was led into hostile situations.
The U.S. propaganda apparatus showcases their enemies as barbarians and uncivilized, and that U.S. soldiers are sent to these countries to bring culture and civilization. This arrogant attitude towards other cultures leads young, inexperienced Americans to assume Iraqis or Afghans to be primitive or barbaric. This disparaging mindset ultimately has soldiers thinking that killing such people is not so big a deal, let alone a crime.
We have been brainwashed into such fear. And here, there's a greater likelihood that you and your film crew will walk out on the street and get killed by a car than you would ever be damaged by a terrorist. And that's what Americans don't understand. And so this is all this fear, this warmongering is all to sustain, as you point out, the greed, that is nurtured by the military-industrial complex.
I remember, you know, going there, and we were all kind of shocked because we had been indoctrinated with this idea that it was just kind of this backward country that couldn't run itself, and we had to go in there and show them how to live their lives.
I think a lot of it is to brainwash a little bit, to make you understand that, you know, you're infantry, you're American, you're better than everybody else, and when you go to war, you need to dehumanize these other people and see them as not human so that you can do your job and kill without remorse.
I feel that our country's given us so many great things. We have to give something back. And in order to keep the federal republic that we have, in order to keep the free enterprise and capitalist system that's been so great for the rest of the world, you have to defend it. And the only way you can defend it is by having a strong military.
So I joined wanting to do good, wanting to help people, really believing in my country and being patriotic and believing what the United States stood for.
To serve my country, and after looking over the combat jobs for my country, I realized that there's nobody better or stronger to do this job than me. And that's why I chose to do Field Artillery Forward Observer, because if somebody's going to be on the front lines, I wouldn't want anybody other than me to be there. And that's why I signed up after 9/11, to go protect my country and our freedoms.
I believed in it so much. And then after I went to Iraq, I knew that I couldn't be a part of that anymore. I really realized what the real role of the U.S. military is in the world.
It was down in New York City, and anything that I could get my hands on, I was reading, and then even the time period after this. And over the next year, what I really started to realize was that the U.S. isn't the good guys. I had always grown up thinking that we were the good guys. And as a soldier, I always thought of myself as a good guy, as the G.I. Joe type figure who's going to run in and save the day.
I think that America is above torturing and kidnapping. Examples, 23 CIA just got convicted in Italy for torturing and kidnapping. Well, guess where the orders came from? The top. You know what I mean? They were convicted in an Italy court. So, I mean, that's just obviously, that's how we looked at over in Italy. Probably not good, you know? I mean, how would you look at somebody that just... America does what the hell they want, when the hell they want to do it. It's all behind the scenes. I don't know what exactly the reasons are, whether it's the poppy production, the drug money in Afghanistan, the oil in Iraq.
The American youth who joined the Army with no previous knowledge and with different motivations suddenly face bitter realities when they're deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. Those who have entered the Army hoping to serve people become extremely disillusioned and frustrated after some time, but immediate withdrawal from the Army is not possible.
All the reasons why they tell you to join, they usually flip around on you, and it's the opposite reasons why you need to stay. So be all you can be, get an education, learn skills that will help you in the real world, become a man, become independent, all this other stuff.
I really tried to make every single soldier who was getting out feel guilty for not re-enlisting, and they'd show us pictures of 9/11, and they'd show us pictures of soldiers who were deployed and say, you know, how can you get out at a time like this?
You know, I mean, in the Army I was like 185 pounds, and I would weigh in on the scales at almost 300 pounds with all the weight that I would carry on my back, with radio, 20 pounds of water, extra batteries, food, different stuff like this. And I was like, it was kind of funny because, like, well, it wasn't funny. I mean, it was breaking me off physically. There's two parts, the physical and the mental part of what you're doing over there.
In addition to the pressure of obeying the inhuman orders of military commanders, other things torture U.S. soldiers' mind and physique as well. To mention but a few, class discrimination, racial discrimination, and the compulsion to do things that endanger their health.
Squad leaders, he was actually my squad leader, he said, raise your hand if you're not going to take the anthrax vaccination. And immediately I put my hand up, and there were about 7 or 8 other young men that did as well. Immediately, since he was my squad leader, he said, "Trucello, put your hand down." I said, "No, Sergeant, I'm not taking it." So, you know, they pressured us. Everyone cracked and took it except myself and another young man. And they sent us to jail. It's that clear. And, you know, it didn't appear that way to a lot of people at first because, you know, it looks like it's the United States military and the government protecting soldiers. But what it did was put thousands at risk because these vaccinations are known to cause, you know, dramatic problems in people, and especially for those that want to have children in the future, you know.
So I would say the vast majority of people in the military now don't want to fight and kill and die endlessly in Iraq and Afghanistan, but they feel that they have to. They feel that they're obliged to. They have no other option.
The military personnel are around 60,000, I think, and the contractors are over 100,000. So that's a discrepancy right there. You're paying contractors 5 to 10 times what the military is getting paid to do the same job and have much better benefits than the military people do.
Because now they have paid mercenaries over there and make it 10 times what our troops do. You have over 70,000 mercenaries in Afghanistan alone. Now, what are these people loyal to? American values or a paycheck? Now, you tell me.
If a soldier wants to leave the army, he has several obstacles. If he leaves the draft unfinished, he will face prosecution and imprisonment. And if he wants to leave the army after the allotted period comes to its end, still, various methods are used to prevent his separation from the army.
I was separated with a general discharge, which theoretically would disqualify me from any education benefits and make me liable for the money that I had previously received through the GI Bill. There were two other Marines in the IRR who were subject to the same harassment at the same time. The way that the Marine Corps Mobilization Command came after me was illegal, the decision of the separation board was legally faulty, and it was a clear-cut case of political harassment. Although we were able to achieve what seemed like wrestling things to a tie, the Marine Corps is able to send two very strong messages. We don't want you speaking out against the occupation, or even portraying the reality of everyday life in Iraq, and even if you're in the inactive reserves, we can still control your fate.
I gave a press conference and I said, you know, I'm Sergeant Chereau and I'm not going to Iraq because I think it's unconstitutional and I think it's racist and immoral. And furthermore, I'm not going to hide and I'm not leaving the country. I'm just going to go back to Brooklyn. And if you want to come get me, come get me.
When I watched those hearings and the testimonies that other soldiers were giving, to realize that, you know, my experiences weren't that unlike some of the people testifying there. So it looked like an organization that would be helpful to join, so I joined.
I ended up turning myself back into Fort Hood in August of 2006. In February of 2007, I was sentenced to 7 months of military confinement at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. I ended up serving 5 months of this and was given a bad conduct discharge. It seems to me that the process of proving conscientious objection is difficult in an all-volunteer army, especially for a 20-year-old.
The first time my stepfather drove me to the Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where we got there on a Friday evening and they told us to come back on a Monday morning to turn myself in. So that opened my stepfather's eyes to the fact that they didn't even care. I think it's a contradiction to give me an honorable discharge for an illegal war against not only one but two countries at the same time. So
Robin was one of the soldiers who refused to finish his draft. He had to escape to Canada, but the Canadian government arrested him and returned him to the U.S. The story of how the military court treated Robin is one of the strangest and cautionary stories of this period in America. Robin's court trial was concurrent with the trials of some of his military comrades who had committed war crimes during their presence in the war. Interestingly, the court announced Robin's sentence was heavier than those of his comrades.
I testified, actually, at Robin's court-martial. Mm-hmm. Robin was given orders to Iraq, I think half a decade ago, and wound up going to Canada. and was the first U.S. citizen, U.S. soldier to be deported from Canada back to the U.S. to face trial. Mm-hmm. And so they did. They deported him, and he was tried in Colorado. And I showed up. It was a couple months after I'd refused to deploy to actually testify on his behalf, you know. And I testified on the stand to the lawyer or to the judge and said, look, you know, you're trying to put Robin in jail for 3 years for doing something that I did just a month ago, and I'm free to tell the tale, you know. This seems a little, you know, what's the disconnect here?
Such actions by the U.S. government and judicial system have worried many American thinkers and intellectuals. They on the one hand consider the war policies of their country as inhuman and ineffective, and on the other face a war and a huge number of victims.
You know, and I don't feel like if I die doing what I did there, you're no safer now than before I died. As a matter of fact, you're less safe because you just lost one of your best combat soldiers. And that's why these wars, they're making America less safe, because they're killing our good combat soldiers. That no good is going to come from these wars and what's going on. Fraze is my best friend that was killed. His daughter was 6 months old when he was killed. This guy was my mortar team. He was killed by an RPG in Iraq. You know, these are all my buddies. This is the only person on my arm that I don't know.
A lot of times they'd say to me, hey, Mom, they used to call me Mom, make sure we get night vision goggles. We have terrible night vision goggles. So when you get up on the podium, tell them we want night vision goggles. Then there was a period of time where they had no body armor. In the very beginning, their body armor was terrible. So they'd call me, when I got on the phone with them, they'd say, we need body armor. And, you know, I had to buy my son body armor before he went on his second tour, because he said his helmet was like a tin can, and the body armor he had didn't cover him. It was just a plate in his chest. I spent $3,000 on getting high-tech body armor because he was on the ground as a grunt.
I'm going to do that using my music to pay tribute to my friends that were killed in these wars. I'm not going to let their memory be forgotten. I'm not going to let people forget what was lost. If I don't talk about it, who is? So many people, so many good people, stories will not be told, and I feel like I'm obligated to tell their stories for them.